You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 27 May. We've got Salesforce results after U.S. market close. How is the SaaS apocalypse really doing? I'm Simon Brown. I'm coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Zimeli Mbandra from FNB Wealth and Investments. The Pepco results. FinTech absolutely knocking it out the park. The rest of the business, I don't know, the sort of traditional clothing part. We'll get his view on that. We're going to be chatting with the CEO in Mass Listed Property in Europe, a high growth sector, but they're also re-looking at strategy. And part of that is that, well, maybe there won't be property anymore. And then Justin Thorne from Galito Corporate Real Estate, evolution of online shopping, bricks and mortar to adapt to the online space. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Joburg streetlights switched off over electricity debt. City Power's SPU accounts, which goes towards keeping the lights on, are in arrears. And then Bloomberg, memory chip frenzy pits SK Hynix and Micron in the $1 trillion club. Micron is a 10-bagger in just a year. Morning markets, US was green, S&P 0.6 higher, NASDAQ 1.8% higher. The East is mixed. We've got Sydney up 0.2%, Tokyo up 1.25%, and then on the downside, Hong Kong 0.75% lower, and Tencent just over 1% in the red. Commodities, mostly red. Gold futures, 4,539. Brent is the green at 98.01. Platinum, 1,951. Palladium, 1,404. The rand is 16.34. Bitcoin, 75,700. Top 40 opening call, red open, 430 points or 0.4% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Zimeli Mbandra, FNB Wealth and Investments. Zimeli, appreciate the early morning time. Pepco numbers out. A couple of things stood out for me. One is revenue up some 13%, but HEPS up only 10%. In other words, sort of negative operational flow there. And really, I mean, the phone yam, rentals, 1.3 million accounts added. Flash really good. But I don't know, clothing perhaps less so. Your thoughts on the numbers broadly?
Morning, Simon. Thank you for having me. Certainly the core retail business was less impressive compared to the financial services business, which totally shot the lights out. It grew revenue by some 40-something percent to 3 billion, as you said. Subscriber growth was massive there as well. Capfin, the lending business, Abacus, the insurance business, and PhoneYam, the cell phone rental business, as well as the early stage of that Class B acquisition that they made. They also delivered strong results. Insurance revenue more than doubled. Cellular rental scaled rapidly. That materially lifted the margins. And I think it's also a very interesting thing with these businesses, with this diversified models or these ever-diversified models that we're seeing, that are able to sort of pick up the branch when one segment is not performing that well. But that's not to say the core business itself, the retail business, didn't perform well. At least it was more subdued, particularly when you're looking at Ackermans. There was some execution issues there, PEP as well. But I think, again, that's also sign of the times. You know, the retailer is really constrained at this current moment. The retail business benefited mostly from the acquisitions. The specialty division with Legit, Swagger, Style, Broadmans, that benefited that business the most. But really, yeah, I think the financial services really shot the lights out, and it's sort of paying dividends to sort of diversify a business that is traditionally a clothing retailer.
I take your point, and perhaps, you know, maybe I'm overly pessimistic on the traditional retail. The numbers weren't bad. It's just when you look at the financial services, it's like so much better. Mm. And Brazil really coming through. I mean, it's still small there, but you know, that obviously their big look into South America, and 6,500 stores. This is, I mean, I'm always surprised or sort of amazed at just how big Pep is. 6,657 stores, massive footprint.
Yeah, they continue to grow that footprint. This across the globe, as you said, that Avenida business in Brazil also scaling pretty well. Mm. You know, that's also a big fintech market as well. So it's a huge positive. I actually want to touch on the Hips that you touched on earlier as well. They with this Plus B and the Cloud Badger platform that they also acquired, I think that sort of added to this negative operating leverage, because the gross margins are big, but we saw that dilution happen below that, and I think that was all the investments into this fintech platform and the banking, their banking ambitions, which you know, bring a lot of execution risk. You know, banking, I don't think it's easy to get off the ground, but you know, it's one of those you know, things where you see the diversification of the businesses that we're seeing mostly, and also the credits as well. The credit book grew quite a lot, but we also saw credit costs go up, and the data costs and provisioning and write-offs go up quite a bit, and that's also adding a bit of risk. And I think that's why we saw yesterday that the reaction from the market wasn't positive overall. It did try to recover some part through the day, but I think, you know, this, that execution risk and that credit book, that brings a little bit of more risk to the balance sheet. Just want to watch and see how that turns out.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, the bank. I mean, the bank is a ways away already. Yes. But if they get that really, really working, those 6,000 odd stores, of course, they've essentially banks. So cash generated from operations, 4.1 billion. That is a giant number. Zimeli Mabandra, FNB Wealth and Investments, appreciate the early morning time. That's our poll today on LinkedIn. What's your take on the stock? I mean, maybe I was harsh there in the intro numbers. I mean, it was, you know, if the fintech just boomed and maybe clothing was a little light, but they did have some challenges in the babies and kids sections. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Taking now with Mihail Vasilescu. He is CEO of MAS, the new incoming CEO. Mihail, appreciate the early morning time. I want to come to strategy. I want to come to disposals and the like. But first, let's take a big look at Eastern Europe. It's certainly been a space where South African investors and REITs have been operational going back 20-odd years. You're in Poland, I think just one in Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, mostly commercial and residential. And still a strong region, a strong growth prospect, lowish interest rates, and an attractive investment space.
Good morning, Simon, and thank you for having me this morning on your podcast. Hope it's as lovely morning in South Africa as it is in Bucharest. Property investment in Eastern Europe has worked well for those investors that knew what they were doing. I mean, unlike the adage that real estate is a place where you start off with a large fortune and you end up with a small fortune, I think the opposite holds true for Eastern Europe over the past two decades. Again, for those investors that knew what they were doing. I mean, just take retail for as an area of focus, which is the sector where we have specialized in primarily. Mm-hmm. Romania, for instance, has been growing at a rate of 10% per year for over two decades now.
Wowza.
Bulgaria, it's 9%, and Poland around 6%, and that's in euro terms, and that is household consumption per capita. So that's, I think, unparalleled growth. And it does mean that today Romania is the second largest market in CEE, and in terms of overall size, it surpasses countries such as Portugal, Denmark, or Greece. And of course, in this process over these years, this resulted in a lot of demand for modern retail space, mm-hmm. which in turn fueled very good opportunities for developments and investments in general. Yes.
I want to pick up on, because if I'm thinking back, and I remember NEPI Rockcastle. This is now 2008 when they were listing. They were actually in my studios in South Africa. They came in and we chatted. And at the point, I kind of thought the story was sort of the Berlin Wall coming down, the freeing up of these countries, and that this would have a shorter term boom. But this boom is now 20 years old, 30 years old if we take it back down to into the 90s, which is a probably fair response. And truthfully, continues onwards. I mean, this wasn't a one-off. This is a region that continues to have good underlying economic growth.
Correct. And of course, the European Union had a lot of contribution there. So Romania's accession in 2007 and the accession by the other countries at different points in time contributed a lot to this growth story. Will this race hold in the future? I think that there is a tapering off. I mean, surely if you look at the same metric, you look at the household consumption per capita in Romania, it is still now, say, roughly half of the levels you will find in France or Italy, for that matter. Mm-hmm. So there is still a lot of road to travel in terms of convergence to Western European levels. But we are seeing that the growth rates are gradually reducing. And we're seeing it also in terms of new opportunities that we can identify. So if I look back 10 years ago when we started Prime Capital and we set up the joint venture with Musk, there was a very large pipeline that we identified and executed over the years. I can't say that the same still holds true. The opportunities are fewer and further apart, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And of course, this had its say on the changing strategy that we announced in the recent sense. But actually, it was initially announced back in October when after the PKI's successful voluntary bid and the board constitution, the board sat down and looked at the opportunities available to MAS and decided that MAS should diversify away from its current sectoral and geography focus to a more broader investment platform that is, say, sector agnostic, geography agnostic, mm-hmm. Because we think that puts the company in a better position to identify the next big thing or big things, mm-hmm. and deliver on its objective to maximize returns over the long run.
Yeah, I take your point. And there was that sense, I think 10 October, which talked around a strategic and a dividend mm-hmm. policy update, the new chair and the line. Mm-hmm. But it has been coming. And you make you've been doing a bunch of transactions. You sold a property to Hyprop. I think the aggregate net proceeds, just over 200 million euros. And the key point is you say you're not necessarily going to be geographically constrained to Central Eastern Europe, but also perhaps not necessarily in the real estate investment space either. Your background, financial services, perhaps completely other sectors where you find opportunity.
Absolutely. That is definitely the intention. As I said, we're looking for the next big thing or mm-hmm. big things that exhibit similar fundamentals as retail did over the last 20 years, mm-hmm. In order to reap the benefits from those investments. And of course, this means that MAS needs to broaden its team to attract adequate talent for this endeavor. It also means that there will be elements of cash drag over at discrete moments in time, and they will take their toll on the over the short term in terms of of returns. Mm-hmm. There may be an impact also at shareholding level, minority shareholding, that is, and this may not align fully with some shareholders. But we do believe that it is in the company's best interest to broaden its horizon and search for new opportunities. We had a very good story. It's time to identify new stories now.
Yeah, no, 100%. Take your point. Do you have, is there a sense of timeline, or is this a case of you really just are out there looking and you don't know how long it's going to take? Or have you got maybe something you already got an eye on?
Well, it's more of the latter. I mean, obviously, okay. we're scanning for opportunities, but these things take time, and they don't happen overnight. We're not really at a point where we can announce something concrete. We'll do so in due course.
Yeah, no, fair enough. We will keep our eye on the Sense channel, see what's come through. We'll leave it there. MAS CEO Mihail Vasilescu, appreciate the early morning time. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Justin Thom. He's a director at Goliti Corporate Real Estate. Justin, appreciate the time. Online shopping fundamentally changed over the last couple of years. I would say we could probably go back to those sort of changes starting in the pandemic. But many of the fears around sort of physical retail dying, not true at all. Physical retail's evolved, and we see, for example, high prop results, they're mall business, actually thriving. But we're still doing bricks and mortar.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't so long ago that everyone was kind of saying that e-commerce would kill retail malls, right? And I guess the narrative has shifted quite significantly. What we've actually seen from our side is that retail hasn't disappeared, it's evolved, right?
Yeah.
Consumers still value physical environments, but now they expect more from them, right? The retail assets performing best today, I suppose, are the experience-led destinations rather than the purely transactional shopping environments, right? So, I mean, online retail is extremely efficient for convenience purchases, as we all know. The check of 60 seconds at Takeoffs are doing so well. But I guess these categories like furniture, decor, fashion, lifestyle still benefit heavily from the physical interaction.
It's actually a good point because I think, you know, tech, I buy all my tech online because, you know, a cable is a cable and it doesn't matter. But a chair, now things get interesting. And we can see it as well. I mean, I mentioned a high prop, but we can see it across the retail space generally. There is stores being opened constantly. I mean, if anything, retail is expanding. Online is a part of it, omni-channel, but the bricks and mortar is kind of in sync with it.
Yeah, I mean, omnichannel is an interesting one, right? Let's dive into what actually omnichannel means. It means that consumers move seamlessly between online and physical retail, right? Exactly what you're saying. So a customer may discover a product online, but it'll go and visit a showroom to experience it physically and ultimately complete the purchase digitally or vice versa, right? So the physical store, I guess, now plays a much broader role in the customer journey.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. I mean, I was buying a couch many years ago and I researched it online. I went into the store, it happened to be in Cromerville, and she just directed me to the website. So I was sitting in their store, but I was on their website. And that's what we see. I mean, Cromerville perhaps is in many ways and there are others. I mean, maybe Design Quarter as well, but Cromerville really is that lifestyle, that design, that retail, that entertainment. It is everything in one place around furniture, decor, homeware, and how we live.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, as you're saying, the consumers aren't only going there to buy a couch. They're browsing the design studios, they're visiting the showrooms, they're meeting designers, having coffee, there are events there, there's lifestyle events, there's nightlife. It's a great district. And we've seen this evolution with Cromwell over time, right? The rentals going back, geez, not even 10 years ago, I think we're like 40 rand a square meter. But as the tenancies driven up, you've seen those rentals increase. The tenants, they're not fighting amongst each other. We know of research that some of the big users in the area actually want double the amount of space that they actually are. So what are they doing? They're really invested in the property that they're leaving. They're heavily investing in another one, which is leaving a gap for someone else to come into it. And you're not seeing a lot of shuffling around at the moment in there. It's very, very, how can you say it? It's very set in its, in its little ecosystem, which is great.
From an investor perspective, is that also sort of add attractiveness purely from an investment perspective that you've got those different income streams? It's not just a retail outlet. It's also a coffee shop. It's also Cromerville. We'll stay there for a moment. Heck, there's a nightclub as well.
Yeah. Investors are a funny thing, right? Strategy. But I mean, investors are becoming more selective, right? We're seeing well-positioned retail assets are still attracting strong interest, particularly assets with defensive characteristics. So we look at Cromerville, right? So we can mention long-dated leases, strong tenants, diversified income, experienced position, and an established precinct, right? So the market's moved away from this generic retail towards this destination retail.
Yeah, it is. And I think it is that destination. And again, when I was buying the couch, we kind of knew that we would go there and we could view, you know, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 at different places. There is, with Cromerville, there is a potential sale in the process. This is a sealed bid process. Talk to me what we mean by sealed bid and why sealed bid as opposed to other alternatives.
So you've got the three different alternatives. So there's the private treaty, which is everyone knows and loves, and then you've got the auction process. And in the middle, we've kind of combined those two aspects of those two in a sealed bid. So a sealed bid process creates a more controlled and structured environment or route to market. particularly for like an institutional grade assets. So we know it allows qualified investors access to a detailed due diligence information or GD room. We also pre-lead this. We go to the banks or lenders before, so they can also conduct a proper analysis. And then we get the guys to submit their strongest offers. So on both sides of the coin, it works for the buyer and the seller, right? It's for a strategic investment asset. It often produces a more disciplined and competitive outcome.
Yeah, I get your point. And as someone who's been to auctions and had to sit on my hand, I mean, auctions just scare me. This process, as you say, a little more controlled. We can all have a cup of tea while we are doing it. We'll leave it there. So Sasson Thomies, Director, Galileto Corporate Real Estate. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Fahima Adia yesterday. She from Momentum Securities, talking those pick and pay results, which saw the expected break-even date pushed back another year. Now, FY29. Importantly, the current CEO, Sean Summers, he leaves FY28. Anyway, we asked you, is this a stock worth investing in? Just over 40% said no, risks are too high. The rest was evenly split between yes, great potential, or only for Boxer. Have your vote on LinkedIn. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabuchle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. MPC rate decision.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.